Coming up on Tech News Today, the internet is ruining your sleep, and the answer may surprise you. It's that kind of story. Also, BlackBerry Messenger reviews get a little astroturfy over on Google Play, and YouTube taking on Spotify. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, October 24th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT1013. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show that takes the stories in the tech world, boils them down to the essentials, and serves them to you in a delicious pot of discussion and headline stew, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Canada's Globe and Mail reports former Pepsi president John Sculley is exploring a joint bid for BlackBerry. Sculley would not confirm the report, but did say, quote, "There's a lot of future value in BlackBerry, but without experienced people who have run this type of business and without a strategic plan, it would be really challenging." Sculley is famous for taking over as CEO of Apple in 1983 and eventually ousting founder Steve Jobs.
Samsung has been fined just over $340,000 for paying for false praise and negative comments about competitors. The issue started in April when Taiwan's Fair Trade Commission opened an investigation and found the allegations were true. Samsung did this through a third-party marketing company, and two local marketing firms have also been fined a combined total of over $100,000 for their part in the marketing ploy. In a separate development, Samsung apologized to Chinese consumers after China's state TV claimed some of Samsung's phones were malfunctioning.
LinkedIn held a press conference to show off its Pulse app, a new version of its iPad app, and a new feature for iOS Mail called LinkedIn Intro. Intro works with Apple's Mail app and will pull in LinkedIn information about the sender from within the iOS Mail application. The LinkedIn iPad app now features new navigation and a new design. Pulse, the mobile news app LinkedIn purchased earlier this year, will feature LinkedIn sharing options when it launches later this year.
A study from the Pew Research Center released Thursday shows one-third of the United States citizens get news from Facebook. Two-thirds of the U.S. uses Facebook, and 80% of those get news there. However, only 4% listed Facebook as an important source of news. Facebook users don't check the source too much either. Only 20% read a news story based on the organization that's reporting it.
YouTube is building a premium on-demand music service set to launch later this year, Billboard reports. The service would give users a choice of free access or access to the service's full catalog of tracks for a fee. Both of the free and paid versions would allow unlimited access to the music on YouTube, but the free version would include ads. If YouTube goes the route of a premium service, it may give it more flexibility in how it packages the music and covers any licensing fees.
TiVo just released a new version of its iOS app that will let you stream video from its TiVo Romeo line of DVRs. Streaming is limited to Wi-Fi only, with LTE streaming coming early next year. Video from your Romeo DVR can also be downloaded over both Wi-Fi and LTE. The new app is available today for iOS. Android users, you get to wait till next spring for your application.
London's Trafalgar Square has been invaded by a 383-inch Microsoft Surface tablet promoting the launch of the Surface 2. The gargantuan promotional tablet sits at the base of Nelson's Column, somehow failing to add in any way to the commemoration of the admiral and his death at the Battle of Trafalgar in 1805. Mm-hmm. Also in no way connected to remembering the British Navy's defeat of the combined fleets of France and Spain is a $100 price reduction on the original Surface Pro, now available starting at $699.
How do you know it doesn't have, well, anyway. Wearable tech time. Let's do that. Samsung has registered a design in South Korea for eyeglasses that can show information from a smartphone and enable users to take calls. The device would have transparent or translucent lenses, include earphones for listening to calls or music, and has been registered as sports spectacles, according to documents posted on the Korea Intellectual Property Rights Information Service website. Samsung applied for protection in March, and the patent was registered October 2nd.
ICANN began its expansion of new top-level domains on Wednesday, including the first domain names with non-Latin characters: Arabic for web network, Cyrillic for online and site, and Chinese for game, all launched. Trademark owners have 30 days to protect their names in the new domain spaces before the new GTLDs take effect, and everyone else can start registering at will.
HP is going to enter the 3D printing market in 2014. Of 3D printing, HP CEO Meg Whitman says, quote, "We'll have something by the middle of next year." The Register says that HP's 3D printing efforts will be aimed at service providers to help them establish 3D printing bureaus. Other than that, HP didn't specify what exactly its 3D printing product will be.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. I've used it a ton. I've used it for book trailers. I've used it for websites where I need illustrative art that I don't have to worry about where it came from or troll around to find quality stuff. With Shutterstock, I know I'm getting top quality stuff. They have 28 million high quality stock photos in there, and they're adding 20,000 images every day. Plus, they review each image individually for content and quality before they add it to its library. They've got pro photographers and artists doing this, so you've got good stuff. It's also easy to find what you're looking for. You can search by subject, by color, which is sometimes really important if you're doing some kind of brochure layout, by file type. If you're like, I definitely need a JPEG, you can limit that. Gender, emotion, all kinds of stuff. Plus, the shareable light boxes when you're collaborating are invaluable. You can put the items that you think might work in there, share them with somebody else. They look, they can say, yeah, I want that one and that one. And then you choose the individual image pack or monthly subscription that best fits your needs. With that monthly subscription, you can download 25 images a day on the standard subscription. So go try it out. Try Shutterstock today. Sign up for a free account. Don't give them a credit card. They won't ask for it. Just start an account. Begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project could be like. Save those images to a lightbox if you're collaborating to review later. And then once you decide to purchase, use offer code TNT1013 and new accounts will receive 25% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com for 25% off new accounts. Use offer code TNT1013. And we thank Shutterstock for their continuing support of Tech News Today. Joining us now, round the old roundtable to discuss the stories of the day. Very happy to have Martin Giles, U.S. technology correspondent from The Economist, on the show. How's it going, Martin?
It's going good. How are you?
I'm doing well. You haven't happened to be out in Trafalgar Square to see the gigantic Surface, have you?
Unfortunately not, no. I've always thought Steve Jobs looks like Nelson standing on the top of that column. And so looking down on Surface is probably quite appropriate, actually.
Yeah, Microsoft may have been thinking that as well, trying to upstage the Admiral there. Well, let's start off talking about YouTube and their new music service. How much is this really going to take on Spotify? Iaz has the story.
Yeah, so Billboard's got a report that YouTube is close to launching a music subscription service. Now, for the service itself, it would have video, of course. It's designed for mobile listening. And the free component would likely be an unlimited on-demand access to full tracks on all platforms, including mobile. Billboard also says they talk about a premium tier that would cost about $10 a month that would give users an unlimited access to a full catalog of tracks, similar to Google Play's all-access subscription music service. So Google would have two different products there. Premium features would include the ability to cache music for offline listening, and you can remove ads. And one of the big features about this service is the ability to stream full albums. Right now on YouTube, not exactly something that's it's known for. The timing, though, YouTube, according to the report, YouTube is said to be hoping to release a product this year, although timing hasn't been determined just yet, and the introduction of a premium music tier apparently to coincide with a larger redesign of the YouTube mobile app, that's been floating around shows that you can actually have offline listening or offline viewing. Martin, what's your general opinion of this report? Does it seem like a great idea for you for Google to have two different music products?
I've always been sort of confused and at the same time impressed by the way Google's let YouTube sort of have its own head. And, you know, here, if they go ahead with this service, it's yet another sign that they say, you know, YouTube, you are a standalone division. Go do what you do best. And, you know, sometimes internal competition can make both offerings better. But it is a little confusing, I think, to the user who says, well, I thought all that video and music stuff was in Google Play. What's YouTube doing this for?
Does it seem like there would always be two separate products? I mean, this seems like it was inevitable as Vivo became such a strong brand on its own and really didn't want to be, you know, some sort of an exclusive service for YouTube, even though obviously that's helped get the Vivo brand in front of a lot of eyeballs because of YouTube. But eventually, I would think that Google would get us all to the point where we understand, oh, you get all this music as part of YouTube, plus all, you know, all the stuff that YouTube's already known for. And then eventually the branding, it kind of turns into one thing.
Yeah. And I would think it has always struck me as a little odd, by the way. My wife works for YouTube, full disclosure, but shouldn't work on this. It was always interesting that they didn't actually change the name of YouTube to Google Video. And it was a strong brand. So I guess I understand that. This is weird to me because I'm not sure. I think of YouTube for videos and music videos now for sure because of that Vivo thing you're talking about, Sarah. But I don't think about them as where I'm going to listen to my music necessarily.
But say that about iTunes. And iTunes is like a place to buy TV shows now.
Yeah, but
I still have a problem with it, but it seems to work out okay for them.
When it comes to trying to find music, so let's say Spotify doesn't have it or it's not on iTunes Radio or it's not on Pandora or whatever, there's always somebody who's uploaded it to YouTube. I know I've used YouTube a bit as a music player at times because it's hard to find these tracks or there's just not a license for Spotify on that. So that I've seen that... at least in my own personal use, increase. I've also seen reports that YouTube is working on a way to actually allow it to do background audio when you put the application in the background. On Android right now, you can't do that. So when you're playing a YouTube video, you have to have the app up front or the audio will stop. This seems to be in line with that. I still think it's weird that they would have Google Play Music and then YouTube Music because how long were you going to pay $10 for both services? Does this cover both or how's that going to work?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to see how this ends up shaking out once, you know, like all of these things, once YouTube actually announces something real. And
at this point, the YouTube brand is stronger than the Google Play brand if we're talking about music subscription. I would say that's true. So why not offer the service in two different places and then kind of see which one ends up making more sense to consumers?
This just screams like a Microsoft move. Why would you have two separate things in the same company?
Well... because you're not going to change YouTube to something called Google Video. They're not going to do that.
It's just not going to happen.
So, and then for all the people who are like, but YouTube's for cat videos. It's like, maybe that's not the place to only, you know, put all your music gigs into that basket either. So.
Well, maybe they'll have a cat video subscription service soon.
I would.
And you will be their first customer.
I would buy it. $10 a month. Where do I sign?
You know, Pinterest is obviously extremely popular. Maybe some of our audience doesn't use it, but a lot of people do. And they just got another round of massive funding. What does that mean for us who like to pin things?
Well, okay. So I am a recent Pinterest enthusiast. Took me a while, but I do think it's a good brand. But it's kind of crazy what the company's valuation is at this point. The company has completed a big round of funding, $225 million, with a late-stage investor Fidelity Investments in the lead. The reason that this is significant to me is that this is a huge amount of funding very soon after a huge amount of funding just back in February for $200 million. At that point, the company was valued at about $2.5 billion. This latest round puts Pinterest at a valuation of about $3.8 billion. And there's some interesting things that have happened for Pinterest this year. The company hired country managers in France, which is where it actually launched its localized edition. Also in England, the company has indicated that they've got a real interest in localized version in Japan. They've expanded into Italy. Sources say that Pinterest wants to expand into a dozen additional countries besides the ones that I just mentioned by the end of this year. Okay. And they scored a deal. It's not a paid deal, but it's still a deal to be pre-installed on Android phones distributed by Telefonica's various carrier brands across Latin America and throughout Europe. So one of those things where it's like, okay, well, Pinterest sort of gets bundled in as this is the place where you scrapbook things, whether it's about home decorating or some sort of a party or maybe your next trip. And Ben Silberman, who's the CEO and co-founder, says they want to be a, quote, service that everyone uses to inspire their future, whether that's dinner tomorrow night, vacation next summer, or a dream house someday, blah, blah, blah. Pinterest also has started to test advertising. And I think that that's where a lot of this really, really makes sense. Pinterest is confident that it can make a lot of money off of advertising.
I'd like to inspire the future advertisers to spend more money.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Their advertising tests so far have been promoted pins that appear in search results, category feeds. It's not unlike the way that Google ads work in search. So I don't know. I mean, Martin, do we think that the pre-installation angle is more interesting here? For, you know, if Pinterest is going to be on mobile devices and we're all just used to seeing that app front and center, or is this kind of more about advertising? What's more interesting to you?
I mean, I think it's more about advertising, and I suspect what's going on here, I mean, is that they're just putting themselves right into Twitter's slipstream. You know, we're about to find out what kind of price range Twitter's going to put on itself for its IPO, and you know, there's a lot of enthusiasm for that one. And so here you have, you know, Pinterest coming along as the obvious next big thing. And so they'll take whatever money they can. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are one or two very big acquisitions in their near future. And that's what they're getting this war chest together for. So it'll be something like, you know, like MoPub, which was the mobile advertising company that Twitter bought. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Pinterest pick one up. Something around data analytics. That's what they're heading for. And that's why they're getting as much money together as they can right now.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and I think what the folks out there who want to invest in this want to see is that they can take this money and turn it into more money, plain and simple. And what folks on Pinterest want to see is, what are you going to do for me? Being pre-installed on an operating system, that's usually the people who are a big fan of that are the people who run the app, because maybe they suck in a few more users. But most people don't like that. I don't think that's a positive area. Maybe in Spain I'm wrong. Maybe in Telefonica's customers are going to love this. But Pinterest is definitely seen, and I think you put it perfectly, Martin, in the slipstream of Twitter. And as long as they don't fall out of that slipstream, I think they have a chance to be right up there next to Facebook and Twitter, which is what we always say. We always say Facebook and Twitter. I think you might see Pinterest, as they are sometimes more often mentioned in that company.
It's just it's just fascinating to me, even though I like Pinterest and I understand why other people like it as well. It's had such crazy rapid growth. And the whole time there are people like us saying, you know, we don't really use it, but it's still extremely popular. You know, and it's the same story over and over. At what point, because Pinterest is not the only service that you can use to scrapbook things. I mean, think about Evernote, which does exactly what Pinterest does and quite a few more things. At what point does Pinterest become it's one of the options that you have, but there are other companies that are just as good or better? The growth has to stabilize at some point.
And I think that's what the pre-installation angle is actually the most intriguing, because if you are on your Android device and you're saying share to, or I guess keep something, you could go to like Google Keep or you can go to Evernote. But if it's pre-installed and you're seeing Twitter, Facebook, or Pinterest, you're like, hey, what's this option? It might give people exposure to something they weren't even aware of, because a lot of these services, Evernote's fantastic. I use it all the time, but it's not necessarily a public-facing kind of thing. To have these pin boards that you could share with friends and keep this kind of visual record of what you like, that's still a bit unique compared to something like Twitter or Facebook. I mean, Facebook does have social elements, but not the same kind of presentation. So I think pre-installation could be big.
I think that launched. Go ahead, Martin.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think as is spot on. And where I see Pinterest getting real traction is sort of in middle America. You know, it's your housewife who's at home who wouldn't normally use an Evernote. What's that? She says, who actually says, actually, this is just an image. It's very easy to do. I put it up there. It's very simple. There's a huge market for that. And I think in many ways, actually, you know, Pinterest has more advantages than Twitter does.
Yeah, the hipsters are on Tumblr, but the real folks are on Pinterest.
The real folks are on Pinterest.
Yeah. Real America is on Pinterest. All right, let's talk a little about this BlackBerry Messenger app that launched finally this week on Android and iOS. And There's some weird stuff going on in the Google Play Store reviews. Matt Baxter Reynolds on Twitter, and actually Alex from the Sunshine Coast of Australia emailed us about this. He noticed it independently. Google Play Store reviews all have the same text. Thank you so much, BlackBerry team. I was waiting this app. It is really great, user-friendly, and smooth. Now, Terrence Eden over at his blog found one review that says, thanks, dear Mr. Ahmed. Please post the following comment on the new BlackBerry Messenger Android app. Thank you so much, BlackBerry team. I was waiting for this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, do we think BlackBerry's doing this? Some third-party companies? How do we think this is happening? Because it's obviously some kind of AstroTurf. Martin, what do you think's going on here?
Well, you know, BlackBerry, you know, placed full-page ads recently saying, you know, we're still here, we're not going away, don't write us off. So there's clearly a full-on PR push going out from the company. And so I wouldn't be surprised if, it's probably not BlackBerry itself, it's probably one of their agencies, their PR agencies that's doing this. But, you know, this is all part of an aggressive push that the company is making to try and convince people that it's not going away. Frankly, I don't buy it, but nevertheless, that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean,
Sarah, what do you think?
Well,
is this BlackBerry on purpose? What's going on?
Yeah, I don't think a bunch of people just decided to, like, let's band together and put out 50,000 five-star reviews. BlackBerry will never know the difference. I think it's probably something that the company set up, and maybe they'll get fined by the Taiwanese FTC, just like Samsung did.
I think it's probably not BlackBerry directly. It'd be something like their ad agency going a little bit bonkers. And I'm thinking of like all the Mad Men episodes I've watched. I'm like, maybe.
Well, it's sure. Yeah. You go through some sort of a third party so that you can say, technically it wasn't but I don't think the whole company.
And they're very mad at Sterling Cooper for this. And what they're going to do is they're going to fire them after this, and they'll be fine because the other thing is that how many reviews are there that are exactly the same? If they're rating by
hundreds,
if there's hundreds, but there's like thousands of actual reviews that are positive, that would be more intriguing. Is what percentage, I guess, is this astroturfing? But I don't really think this is going to hurt BlackBerry. This week has been so full of news. I don't think people will remember they did anything this week.
BlackBerry has denied that it's them. By the way, they told Terrence on KSPR.mobi. That's why I keep hesitating to say it. It's Shakespeare.mobi, but it's not all spelled. Let me find their quote. We have recently been made aware of a number of potentially fake five-star reviews. We do not approve of or condone such activities, are committed to working with Google to resolve this. It could be just a spammer who is actually conducting some kind of phishing scam or something. And one of the ways they did it was to get people excited about BlackBerry Messenger.
That's possible. Yeah, or, click on, some usernames or, whatever. I feel like if the BlackBerry Messenger itself was somehow, installing some kind of Trojan horse, it's like if there was something actually happening here, then I could get all up in arms about it. I mean, how many stupid reviews do you read? It's like, I mean, reviews for apps is not exactly the most highbrow place, to have an adult discussion about anything on the internet. So
the grammar of the fake review, though, just reeks of spam.
That's repeated and repeated.
I mean,
this is almost what you would see if maybe someone was spoofing an app in the Play Store and wants you to think that it's the official app. And then you read through and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Well, what is this? They're trying too hard to make me think that this is the authentic app. Obviously, that isn't the case here. This is the official app. But yeah, there's something reeks about this.
This wasn't one of those weird workaround things where you can jump the waiting line for BlackBerry Messenger. Is it?
I wondered that too. But I mean, wouldn't they say that? I mean, they're saying right now that it's not them.
Right. So if it was automated and like, oh, I found this trick works. If I do a five-star review, I got jumped in line. Maybe. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what could possibly cause the same
cut and
paste. They're
all using the same. Yeah, exactly. Same cut and paste.
All right. Google is testing. Well, some people are calling it banner ads. What do you think, Ayaz? Would you call it a banner ad?
They look like large profile images you'd see on Google Plus. That's what this looks like. So Google's confirming with Search Engine Land that it's testing these large images for specific branded queries. At Synergy HQ posted an image on Twitter showing a large sponsored card with an image for Southwest Airlines on top of search results. The search was for Southwest Airlines. So it's not so crazy to see a giant image there. Underneath, you see a bunch of text, and Synergy HQ looked at the HTML. They said the text beneath is not an ad. It's actually search results that are put underneath. The ad itself is that giant image of Southwest.com and its airplane. Google spokesperson confirmed this is a small experiment running currently in the U.S. market. And at Synergy, they also learned that Google's working with about 30 advertisers right now, Crate and Barrel, Virgin America, and Southwest, a part of that that group. Now, way back in 2005, Google promised no banner ads on the Google homepage or web search results ever. It was a very it's a very straightforward statement. Martin, do you think this potential change would bother people? Would it bother you?
You know, I don't think it'll bother people, and I'm not surprised Google's trying it. You know, they need to keep. They've had some spectacular revenue growth recently. You know, their share price is over $1,000, and so they need to find more ways to keep that engine revving. And you know, very large banners. I'm sure they can charge a considerable sum of money for that. But you know, the question is, what's the quality of what comes underneath? If that starts changing because of those ads, there's some kind of change to the mix, and that people find those results less satisfying, then there's a problem. But, you know, what I'm looking at, I don't see any particular reason to press the alarm bell.
Yeah, it's almost less of an ad. It's more of just like a branding thing.
Yeah.
Like, these are the results you'd get anyways. Here's our logo, you know, or yeah, here's our branding logo.
But this is a sponsored result. This is not a natural search result. It's all, this big banner only shows up in the sponsored result. So it is an ad and it's branding, and those two are very close to each other.
Sure.
On the other hand, you're right. It's the banner itself is not a banner ad. It is an extra image in the sponsored search results showing up. It's part of AdWords. So I don't think it's fair to say, oh, they're calling banner ads. And besides, Marissa Meyer is the one who promised no banner ads on Google. She's running Yahoo now. They don't care what she said anymore. So they can do whatever
she
they want.
She took her, like, her reserved sense of taste with her over to Yahoo. And Google's like, put giant images, flatten it all into plus. This will be great. Cards everywhere.
Expect Yahoo to go down to just one search box within the next 3 years. I think this is fine, although having sponsored search results push my real search results down lower, I don't like, unless it never becomes a problem, right? If the top search result is always southwest.com when I search for the when I do a search and this is what comes up instead, that doesn't really make much difference to me, especially if it's a relevant ad. What I worry about is when this starts to get used for other things, or people trying to shoehorn other things into the way it's being rolled out right now in this test.
Yeah, right now the image that was posted on Twitter is it's understated. You know, it's a very clean image of an airplane with Southwest.com. No, like, fancy sayings, no animations. At least no animations were reported. It's just that if Google starts doing this with the search results, we already had the results pushed down because of that gray box on top and the black bar on top. And Google's changed that that design a bit, so the results keep moving further and further and further down the page. I just don't know where this is going to end up. I don't want this to turn into some hideously unusable kind of search engine, because I don't feel like leaving Google right now. I guess I could go off to Bing or
Bing and decide.
I just
dogpile.
This doesn't bother me in the least. It's so easy to just, like, look past what's clearly an ad. If you don't like it, just scroll down a teeny tiny bit to the search results that you were looking for anyway.
Wow, you got some energy on you. You're like, I can just scroll.
I can't be bothered
to scroll, Sarah.
Yes, you can, and you do.
No.
You already do this. It's going to be okay.
You know, one of the reasons Sarah's so tired of scrolling, though, is because the internet is disrupting her sleep schedule.
Yeah, it's disrupting all sorts of aspects of my life. Personal life affected, work not going so well. I'm kidding. But Scott Walston, who's a senior researcher at the Tech Policy Institute, took a bunch of data that he got from the American Time Use Survey. A lot of that was about what people do online and their habits and such. And then he released his findings for the National Bureau of Economic Research and kind of quantified internet behavior. For every 10 minutes, found Walston, that people spend on, quote, online leisure time. So that's, like, not actually using the internet for your job and not actually checking email that would be work related. So it's, you know, just kind of hanging out online. They spent 2.9 minutes less on all other types of leisure. For example, 2.7 fewer minutes working, 1.2 fewer minutes on personal care, including sleep, 42 fewer seconds on household activities, 32.4 fewer seconds on offline socializing. Now, you might be like 30 seconds fewer on socializing. This is silly. It doesn't really mean anything. But there, this is via every 10 minutes. And the study found that, especially for people who hang out on the internet, you know, for fun, I think we're all definitely guilty of that or lucky enough to do that, however you feel about it. It's more like an average of 100 minutes per day, and in many cases, a lot more. So this starts to add up. It turns into like a, 30 minutes of sleep that I'm not getting regularly. Cumulatively over a lifetime, it's going to seem like a really big number. So what's interesting is that Walston sums it up as a cost of online activity is less time spent with other people. But of course, that completely fails to account for people being social with each other online. And yes, it's not the same as necessarily sitting across from somebody or shaking somebody's hand, but it could definitely be a social connection. So if we all live on the internet, Martin, how much does this stuff bother you?
Could you repeat the question? I'm sorry. It's been a long night. Now, it doesn't bother me in the least. I see these studies day in, day out. Oh, the world's coming to an end because we're all sitting online and we're not talking to each other face to face. You know, I have two teenage children who spend more time on the web than they do spending face-to-face contact time. They have bigger social networks. They have more friends, and they know more about what's going on in their lives than I ever did a long time ago. Now, you may say, okay, well, those relationships are less deep, less good. I don't see any sign of that. When they meet face-to-face, they have a great time. So, you know, frankly, I don't buy a lot of this stuff.
So let me get this straight. This study shows that if I spend time doing something, that has effects on the amount of time I spend doing other things.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. The idea is that there are certain things that we all need. For example, you know, eat right, sleep enough, you know, groom yourself, fit into social life. So the implications are, as you spend more and more time online, that's just going to eat away at the other things that you still need to do. And that's what suffers. I mean, that's what he's getting at on a very, very high level here is eventually it's going to eat into the basic parts of life in a way that's going to negatively affect us all. But then he also says, yeah, and our relationships are really suffering. And it's like, I don't know. I've got a lot of internet friends and it's okay with me.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this and it just... This just looks like my Reddit life. So when I'm on Reddit, the house isn't vacuumed and the clothes are still in the laundry machines and I'm not paying attention to that stuff. When I leave Reddit, I get about 2 hours of productivity back. So it's not that surprising to see it, but to have it quantified like this for every 10 minutes, I think you could blow this up to like if you made this every hour and you see how much time you're losing per hour, people might start taking this a little bit more seriously because they might realize, okay, online leisure time, if there's time for that, maybe I can do other things that are also leisurely and maybe more fulfilling for them. But if they find fulfillment in it, this is like a happiness discussion, isn't it? If you find it to be, if you're connecting to people that are all over the country and you're friends with or around the world and you can't be in physical space with them, mm-hmm. it's a positive thing to have this online leisure time over doing the laundry or doing the vacuuming around the house. So it's 9.6 fewer seconds at parties. Yeah, I knew that's why I'm not going to parties, because I'm on the internet all the time. That must be
That's per every 10 minutes, I guess. Yeah.
Well, every 10 minutes,
you're not
I should be
really
going to a
party. At the party for 9 seconds left.
But even so, like a lot of these things can be done, like educational activities, spending time with people, socializing, relaxing and thinking can be done while you're online. I do a lot of thinking because I'm reading something or maybe even chatting with someone. I guess that's not what they're talking about here. You can go to party. It just, I don't know. It strikes me as a scare story. That's great for your evening news headlines.
I don't think it's scary. It's just
then again,
real.
We're not really the target audience of people who would get scared by something like this.
Well, this is work. This isn't leisure.
I'm like, do you know how much more interesting the internet is than anything else I could do? I'm winning.
You're a part of the problem, babe. You keep making the internet interesting, and it's depriving all of those people of sleep. Stop it. All right. Let's finish up with data caps. Michael Powell, former FCC chairman, he's now the president and CEO of the National Cable and Telecommunications Alliance. It's NCTA. It's the Cable Television Lobbying Group. He was speaking at Cable Tech Expo in Atlanta and said that cable companies, quote, should be moving with some urgency and purpose toward implementing data caps. The NCTA website argues that Americans are accustomed to paying for what they use, and some critics want to force average users to pay a flat fee akin to a universal service fee, trying to argue the benefits of bandwidth caps. They go on to say measuring gross margins on broadband service is an irrelevant exercise in a capital and labor-intensive business. The true challenge lies in recovering the fixed costs of the network investment while planning for future modernization. I feel like, what does that mean? It means don't pay attention to how much money we're making now on the margins. We need to be able to afford new equipment later. If we don't charge more for caps now, we won't be able to do that. They claim that light users somehow subsidize heavy users. At the same time, Powell said in the same speech, DOCSIS 3.1 is capable of supporting downstream speeds as high as 10 gigabits per second and upstream speeds as high as 2 gigabits per second. We're there and beyond. DOCSIS 3.1 doesn't necessarily require a whole lot of new equipment, maybe some new modems, maybe a little back-end stuff. But comparison, when they rolled out DOCSIS 3.0, the capital costs for JCOM in Japan in 2009 were $20 per house. That's nothing. A better way to look at it is like, well, what if you have to do something like fiber? Let's say we got to roll out fiber. Verizon spent $1,533 per customer to roll out Fios in 2009. That's a lot more, but for a company that's going to make, you know, going to charge you $80 a month, that cost is recovered fairly quickly. I think Carl Bode has something to say that might illuminate this. He told Wired in January, investors in this country are simply too myopic to wait the required length of time to see adequate returns. These services are certainly profitable. They're just not profitable enough, quickly enough, for short-sighted investors. And they're looking at the wireless industry and how much money bandwidth caps are making for the wireless industry. And they're saying, let's do this. Now, John Brodkin, who is a, I want to get your title right, senior IT reporter at Ars Technica, is on the line. He wrote the Ars Technica story reporting on this FCC speech by Michael Powell. John, thanks for joining us. What do you make of this attempt to say, hey, bandwidth caps are good for users?
Well, it's certainly not good for users. I mean, it's good for cable companies. And I mean, he said it could, you know, end up being so that consumers wouldn't be subsidizing heavier users if you only use a few gigabytes a month. But I think it was Carl Bode or someone else made an argument pointed to recently, some of these companies have trialed plans where you only save $5 a month and you get a 5 gigabyte data cap, which you can actually blow through in one single 2-hour Netflix movie, and then you'd be paying more. So, I mean, it's pretty unlikely that it could be better for consumers. I mean, it's possible, but I wouldn't want to take that chance.
My problem with this is the usage-based thing. Usage of electricity is based on the fact that you have to keep making electricity. You have to, you know, burn oil or burn some other kind of fuel to make electricity. Can you run out of bits? Are you making, where are the bits sourced from? And what about the fact that I'm sending bits back? Do I get credit for the bits I send back since I have to pay for the bits that I get in?
Well, no, you're paying for both the bits you send forward and receive. But they do pay for bits in the sense that they create these large data centers, but at a certain point, once you've built out the infrastructure, there isn't much of a marginal cost to, you know, giving you a few more gigabytes. So it's, you know, the argument isn't a great one, and I think they're already making, you know, gigantic profit margins, so they're not really hurting by giving some people a terabyte of data while everyone else uses, you know, 100 gigabytes or something.
Martin, what do you think of this situation and the fact that the NCTA is now really making a push to go backwards and do bandwidth caps, even though it's pretty clear that the country as a whole doesn't really want them?
And sorry, that question was directed at Martin. His bandwidth just choked there, and so I had to reconnect with him. So literally, he came on and didn't hear the Martin part.
Martin, what do you think of this idea of the NCTA pushing for bandwidth caps, saying, no, let's redouble our efforts to get America to accept bandwidth caps?
Yeah, I'm very suspicious of it. I mean, I think, you know, the argument there about the sunk costs of these data centers and then, you know, basically no marginal cost really to the company is a very powerful one. So they really have to make their case much, much more convincingly than they have done to date, I'm afraid.
Is there a way they can make that argument convincingly for bandwidth caps? And John, I know you cover this a lot. Are there good arguments for saying, yes, we do need bandwidth caps for any reason?
Only if they were really struggling financially, but they're obviously not. I mean, even companies like I've switched from Comcast to RCN. They're charging me like $70 less a month and I have unlimited data. Whereas in Comcast, I think they're moving from like a 250 gig to 300 gig data cap. But if a company like RCN can do unlimited, it's hard to think that a company like Comcast can't.
So what's the solution? Do we need more competition? How do we get more competition? It seems like the telecommunications company are sort of ceding this ground to the cable companies.
Yeah, I don't really see any way we're going to get it. I mean, Google Fiber is good, you know, but it's only in a few areas. I'm not seeing any major competition spreading throughout the country. One thing that I don't know if it's worrying, but it's at least kind of funny. I mean, Michael Powell was the former FCC commissioner under George Bush. So he's now the top lobbyist for the cable industry. Our next FCC commissioner, assuming he's approved by the Senate, was nominated by Barack Obama. So he's, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you're still getting the same thing because the new guy is the former top lobbyist of the cable industry. So it's like every FCC commissioner is either a future or former cable lobbyist. And they're really making the rules.
And I think the real what really needs to happen here is this last sort of 100 yards to the house. It's sort of right now it's controlled by usually in most places a duopoly in America, and that's very different. Most other parts of the world, you have that sort of like common carriage, so a number of different providers can come through those wires. And of course, the cable industry wants to keep it that way. I think the biggest change that America could do that would be very pro-competitive would be to open up that last sort of mile, if you like, to the house.
Interesting thoughts. Well, John Brodkin, thank you so much for joining us to chat about that. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And follow his work, ArsTechnica.com, if you want to keep up on this issue. It's one of the good resources that is out there. Thanks again, man. All right, let's move on to the randomizer. I refrain from giving him crap about his Red Sox jersey because they beat the crap out of my Cardinals. I have no standing for that.
That was big of you, Tom.
Yeah, he gets to wear it. All right. He deserves to wear it, I guess I should say. Straw poll today, overwhelming 79% people voting for Japanese scientists successfully test asteroid blasting space cannon. This was submitted by Gray580, actually. He told me about it on Twitter. I think Habituela Condolce may have submitted it on Reddit as well. And everybody loves it. I mean, who doesn't love a space cannon, right? Asteroid blasting space cannon. The idea is that they launch this thing. The Japanese Space Agency is going to launch it. It's going to go near the asteroid. They think it's one of the oldest asteroids in the belt. And then they'll study the debris after they blast it to see if they can find, you know, organic molecules or the building blocks of life. It gives us an insight into what the universe was like in its early days.
And then they'll blast the debris. It'll be like asteroids. It'll be awesome.
Right. And then the asteroid will fire back.
Mm-hmm. It'll be like the Space Invaders.
Right.
I'm loving this.
I think
high-res space invaders.
High-res space invaders coming to you from the Japanese Space Agency. Let's check the calendar.
Hey, Twitter's roadshow pre-IPO starts tomorrow, October 25th. I like to think of them on, like, chariots, you know, like, yeah, spread the word. We're IPOing.
A chariot, not a horse, but just...
Like some sort of big... parade.
Is it being pulled
by
birds?
The Wells Fargo wagon?
Kind of, yeah.
Pulled by bluebirds.
It's not just Twitter. I always think of all companies doing their roadshow this way.
I like to think of them in a big warehouse comparing old ancient Twitter artifacts and valuing them, giving them a valuation. That kind of roadshow. Different roadshow entirely.
This tweet, had it not been deleted, would have been very retweeted. Very favorited indeed. Apple stores are opening at 8 a.m., by the way, on November 1st for that iPad Air launch. So if you're interested because you're not able to pre-order, online opens as well that day. But you can get there early. Get in line.
All right, let's check what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from Joshua who writes, in regards to Sarah's question about the information you would get when Automatic's quantified car device sends a driver a text when the check engine light comes on, the check engine light comes on when the when a trouble code has been saved in the computer of the car. Mm. The text message could contain the trouble code and possible reasons for that trouble code. People who would prefer to fix their own car can use that information to get the right parts to fix the problem. You can also use this information to decide if the problem is something that needs to be fixed right now, like low oil pressure, or something that you can wait on a little later.
Yeah, that's. I guess that would be good to know. Especially if I'm like, can I wait a week? Like, can I drive?
It's like loose gas cap.
How much longer
can I ignore this? That's right. What I want. You can ignore it for 5 days. Got another email from Howard who says, I've been using the automatic in my car for the last 3 months. On top of it giving useful driving data, the unit can be set to beep on fast accelerations, hard stops, and driving over 70 miles per hour. That doesn't even sound fast to me. The real-time feedback has changed how I drive since I don't want to hear the beeps, and I especially don't want passengers to hear them. Yes, these could be turned off, but I've noticed I'm a much safer driver, and I'm getting at least 3 to 4 miles per hour better gas mileage since installing automatic. Well, that's good. Sounds like it's working for you. Positive reinforcement.
Yeah, interesting way of I didn't think about that usage case for it. I'm not sure it works for everybody, but that is interesting. We also got over and over again, thank you so much, Tech News Today team. I was waiting the show. It is really great, user-friendly and smooth.
I agree. Oh, it is user-friendly and smooth.
So there's that about 115 times. Thank you, Martin Giles, for joining us today. Appreciate it. Let folks know what you're up to over at The Economist.
Yeah, you can find me at Martin Giles on Twitter and economist.com.
You know, I'm a big fan of the podcast over there. Are you still working on those, or your appearances seem to have been spaced out?
That's too bad. Yeah, no. And it's the lack of sleep because I'm on the internet all the time.
Right, exactly. Well, check it out, economist.com. Martin does great work over there. Don't forget, also, you can submit your stories to our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's a place to affect our story coverage. Let us know what stuff you like, what stuff you don't. Email us, tnt@twit.tv. You can give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. It's a free call in parts of Indiana. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/technewstoday. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast to get the show notes at twit.tv/TNT. We will be back tomorrow with Darren Kitchen and Len Peralta, I think. See you then.